This is the introduction for the pantograph, part one. Hello, this is Jan Kane. I'll be reading to you today from the pantograph dated Monday, November 11th. It's Veterans Day. We'll start with an article entitled Uniform Inspection. Exhibit at ISU gives you a new sense of respect. The byline is Lenore Sobota. From a wool uniform dating back to World War I, to a set of camis in lightweight synthetic material, every item on display in Boot Camp, A Century of Military Attire, has a story to tell. Boot Camp is the current exhibit at the Lois Jett Historic Costume Collection in the Department of Family and Consumer Sciences at Illinois State University. The gallery is located in room 126 of Turner Hall, east of Redbird Arena. The exhibit continues through January 30, but will have extended hours of 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Veterans Day. This honors a really significant group of people, said Jennifer Banning, director of the collection. It gives you a new sense of respect. These are people who fought for our freedom. More than a dozen uniforms from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines are on display, along with caps and other items, including an Army-issued Bible. Banning would like to have included the Coast Guard, but the collection doesn't have anything from that branch yet. It would be nice to have something that represents each of the armed forces, she said. Many of the uniforms displayed include a picture of the person who wore the uniform. There is a flight jacket from Lieutenant Colonel Frank Melchiori, an ISU graduate who served in the Air National Guard in Afghanistan. And there is a uniform from First Lieutenant Emma Summer, who served in the Army Nurse Corps in World War II. When ISU police officer Jessica Jones stopped by to see the exhibit, she asked if there was a women's Marine uniform in the collection. Banning said no. Now there is, hers, and it's on display as part of this exhibit. Jones also helped them accurately display the uniforms, with insignia and other items in their proper places. Banning appreciated the help. We're not military experts, we're dress experts, said Banning. We've learned a lot of small things. Jones graduated from ISU in May 2007 and joined the ISU police in December after an internship. She served in the Marines from 1999 to 2003. I like to sneak in to see their new displays, she said. Jones donated two uniforms, the one she wore at her graduation from boot camp at Paris Island, which is part of the latest exhibit, and the maternity uniform she wore while pregnant with her daughter. The latter cracks me up with its not very stylish maternity panel, she said. It was big and roomy. Jones said she donated the uniforms to help the school and to make sure women were represented as well. Sydney Christensen of Rockford, a senior in fashion merchandising who worked on the exhibit, said, "Hearing personal stories is a great part of it." "The exhibit is more than just a clothing display," she said. "This is U.S. history." She liked some of the seldom-seen military items in the collection, such as long underwear and sweaters. Many of the people who have visited the exhibit have shared their own stories or family stories. Banning said the exhibit has drawn more interest than any she has been involved in after more than a decade at ISU. "Everyone has a connection to the military. Everyone knows someone who served," said Banning. Seniors Haley McCasland and Kyla Slayton, lead curators for the exhibit, said the goal is to honor veterans by showcasing what they wore in peacetime and war in the last century. "The more people know, the more respect and appreciation they may gain toward the military," said McCasland. In setting up the display, one of the challenges was finding smaller mannequins for use with some of the older uniforms. "You get that sense of how young that person was," said Banning. "Knowing those serving were as young or younger than many of the students on campus makes it more real," she said. The gallery hours for this exhibit. The regular hours for the Lois Jett Historic Costume Collection through December 5th are 2:30 to 4, Mondays and Wednesdays, and 9 to 10:30 a.m., Tuesdays and Thursdays. The gallery also will be open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Veterans Day and from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sunday, November 17th. To schedule additional times from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, or for more information, contact Jennifer Banning at jbanning@ilstu.edu. Our next article is titled, City Not Seeking Property Tax Hike. Increase gets zero consideration. The byline is Maria Nagel. Property owners in Bloomington will see no change in their tax bills next year related to proposed tax levies for the city and public library. But revenue from the 2019 tax levies is expected to increase by about $225,000 for the city and nearly $64,000 for the library because of growth in the local economy and not because of any changes in the tax rate, city officials said. Council has made it very clear that they want to hold taxes, and very much so the property tax portion for our residents, said Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason. While we're only 15% of the total tax bill, it's important to the residents. The elected officials hear that, and the property tax rate is going to remain the same as last year. Because of the Veterans Day holiday Monday, the City Council will consider the matter when it meets at 6 p.m. Tuesday at City Hall. I am very glad that we're in strong enough fiscal shape that there's absolutely zero consideration of any increase in property taxes or other taxes, said Mayor Terry Renner. I am also happy to see that there is growth in our economy that is not attributed to any increase in taxes, but to new businesses and residences. Gleason will ask the council to consider keeping the city's property tax rate, excluding the public library share, the same or close to last year's rate of $1.084 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation, or EAV. Because there has been a slight increase in the EAV, which is based on the total taxable value of properties in the city, last year's tax levy amount of $20.28 million could increase to $20.51 million, generating $225,000 in additional revenue without a tax rate hike, Gleason said. The additional revenue has not been earmarked for a specific purpose, Gleason said. The Bloomington Public Library's property tax rate is expected to remain the same or close to last year's rate of $0.2608 per $100 of EAV, said BPL Director Gene Hamilton. Because of the growth in the EAV, the library's tax levy last year of $4.871 million is expected to increase to $4.935 million. The $63,519 in additional revenue would be used as a down payment for the library's proposed expansion or pay for $2 million in needed repairs, which include replacing the roof, said Hamilton. The two levies are expected to yield a combined tax rate that is unchanged or close to last year's rate of $1.345 per $100 evaluation. The resulting property tax bill for those two levies, payable in 2020, is expected to remain essentially unchanged at about $736 for a house valued at $165,000. The preliminary EAV is estimated at $1.892 billion, up from $1.88 billion last year. The final EAV for the upcoming year will not be determined until January 1st, but the city must adopt its levy based on the preliminary estimates and file it with the McLean County Clerk's Office by December 31st. Unlike Normal and some other municipalities that fund their police and fire pensions entirely from property taxes, the Bloomington Council in 2014 adopted a funding plan for the public safety pensions, mixing the tax levy and utility taxes to make accelerated payments over several years toward a goal of 100% funding by 2040. A state law that took effect in 2011 requires all public safety pension funds to be funded at 90% by 2040. Last week, Normal changed its goal of 100% funding of its public safety pensions to 90% by 2040 as a measure to keep property taxes for next year from increasing. Gleason said the city will wait to see if the Illinois legislature during its November session decides to consolidate nearly 650 downstate and suburban Chicago public safety pension funds into two funds to maximize investment returns. Now let's turn to today in history. Today is Monday, November 11th, the 315th day of 2019. There are 50 days left in the year, and today, of course, is Veterans Day. On November 11th, 1972, the U.S. Army turned over its base at Long Binh to the South Vietnamese, symbolizing the end of direct U.S. military involvement in the Vietnam War. Also on this date, in 1620, 41 pilgrims aboard the Mayflower, anchored off Massachusetts, signed a compact calling for a body politic. In 1831, former slave Nat Turner, who'd led a violent insurrection, was executed in Jerusalem, Virginia. In 1918, fighting in World War I ended as the Allies and Germany signed an armistice in the Forest of Compiègne. In 1921, the remains of an unidentified American service member were interred in a Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery in a ceremony presided over by President Warren G. Harding. In 1929, the Ambassador Bridge, spanning the Detroit River between Michigan and Windsor, Ontario, Canada, was dedicated. In 1942, during World War II, Germany completed its occupation of France. In 1960, South Vietnamese President Ngo Dinh Diem survived a coup attempt by army rebels. However, he was overthrown and killed in 1963. And our thought for today, I hate war as only a soldier who has lived it can, only as one who has seen its brutality, its futility, its stupidity. This is from President Dwight D. Eisenhower, who lived from 1890 to 1969. Let's look at what was happening locally on this same date. 100 years ago, November 11th, 1919, this is the first Armistice Day, recalling the formal end to the World War. Local veterans, from doughboys to doctors, told the newspaper their stories of where they were on the day the war ended. Bloomington had an all-day celebration, and there was a ceremony at ISNU. 75 years ago, November 11, 1944, three local Marines have bit parts in the movie Marine Raiders at the Irvin Theater. They are Robert Jones and James Hall, both of Bloomington, and Glenn Miller of Normal. Some folks have seen the movie several times to confirm their identities. On this day in 1969, notable local losses today include Albert Burt Jackson, age 51, formerly of WJBC Radio, and W.H. Brazelton, age 75. He came to Bloomington as a teacher, but ended up buying and operating the old Normal Sanitary Dairy until he retired. 25 years ago, on November 11th, 1994, police found a 16-year-old runaway staying in a dorm room at ISU's Haney Hall. They arrested the girl and her host, who had kept her as a guest for days. The girl is wanted on a warrant. The host was charged with obstructing police and harboring a runaway. Our next article is titled Jingle All the Way. About 400 participate in 32nd annual Jingle Bell Run for Arthritis. The byline is Kevin Barlow. When the pain in Glenn Harbin's back went beyond the point of an inconvenience, he went searching for help from the medical profession. Doctors determined he was suffering with fibromyalgia, a disorder characterized by widespread musculoskeletal pain accompanied by fatigue, sleep, memory, and mood issues. I started researching it, and the Arthritis Foundation kept popping up in all of the information I looked at, Harbin said. I read their stuff, and at the same time, my doctor recommended getting more physically active to help relieve some of the pain. He joined the Fleet Feet Running Club and in 2014, that led to his participation in the annual Jingle Bell Run, the largest area fundraiser of the year for the Arthritis Foundation. On Sunday, he served as the adult honoree for the 32nd annual event. It means a lot to me because when you start looking, there aren't enough places doing research into fibromyalgia, he said. There haven't been a whole lot of breakthroughs. As you talk with other people with fibromyalgia, you hear the same stories. Some of the pharmaceuticals don't work all that well, but running does help me. It helps me relax, relieve tension, and feel better. Officials said they hope the event at Heartland Community College will raise about $25,000 this year. Funds go to Arthritis Foundation-funded research for new medicines and treatments, fellowships for rheumatologists to help to address the shortage of those specialists, and family and educational programs. Participants are encouraged to dress in festive costumes. Final figures were not available Sunday. About 400 people participated in the Kids Fun Run, the 5-kilometer run, or the 1-mile walk. The Jingle Bell Run is a tradition in Bloomington Normal and known nationally as the original festive race for charity, said Jessica Barrick, executive director of the Chicago and Central Illinois office of the Arthritis Foundation. Our honorees and volunteers are what make this event successful and memorable each year. More than 54 million Americans, or 1 in 4 adults, and 300,000 children, 1 in every 250, live with arthritis. It is America's leading cause of disability, and it is the reason that Denise Goff of Normal was there to help raise money. My mother had arthritis and suffered from that pretty extensively, she said. My father suffered from gout, and so it is personal to me because I know how hard it is to live with that pain. Bob and Michelle Rush initially had their own personal reasons for participating in the event, but now it means even more. We met here 8 years ago, Bob said, and now we're married, Michelle added. The couple agreed it is a special day for them because of the significance it holds in their personal lives, but it also helps raise money for a good cause. Next is an article from Normal. The headline is Input Sought on Master Bike Plan, Open House Set for 5 p.m. Wednesday at Activity Center. The town of Normal is seeking public input as it updates its 2009 Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. An open house will be 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the Community Activity Center, 1110 Douglas. Project staff will give brief presentations at 5:15 p.m. and 6:15 p.m. describing the planning process. During the remaining time, attendees will be able to talk to town staff and the consultant about their experiences in Normal as they travel by bike, on foot, or with a mobility assistive device. They will also be able to view maps and discuss where they have a positive experience walking and bicycling, and areas where they face challenges. As part of the update process, the town will evaluate progress made on the existing plan, incorporate the latest engineering design standards, examine pedestrian and bicycle project priorities, and provide many opportunities for public input. Community members are asked to complete a survey before December 31st at www.surveymonkey.com/r/normal-bpmpupdate. The planning process will continue through summer of 2020. Progress on the existing plan includes the extension of Constitution Trail, installation of bike lanes, construction of new sidewalks, and the coordination of walk and bike to school events. Let's turn to Monday memos. The first is titled Home and Aid Gift Program Opens. Children's Home and Aid's annual Adopt a Family holiday program is open for volunteers to adopt local families in need this holiday season. Some 160 Central Illinois families, about 600 children and adults, need necessities and gifts to help make their holiday season brighter. The families receive early childhood education, home visiting services, or family support from Children's Home and Aid. The deadline to adopt a family is December 6th. To do so, or to make a monetary contribution, or to volunteer, contact Laura Cordero at 309-834-5294 or 309-846-1037 or email lcordero@childrenshomeandaid.org. Next, man receives piece of World War II history. Corn Belt Energy Board member Pete Borowski of Bloomington has been given a part of the original deck from the USS Silversides submarine on which his father, Marion Red Borowski, served during World War II. The gift was made by Corn Belt Energy Board member Rob Angus of Ottawa. Angus's brother-in-law, Gary McKean, works in Muskegon, Michigan at the USS Silversides Naval Museum. The deck piece was removed during refinishing. Borowski served on 8 of the 14 tours of the Silversides, which sunk 23 ships, the third most of any Allied submarine during World War II. Gifts collected for overseas children. The Pantograph area has several sites serving as drop-off locations to collect Operation Christmas Child shoebox gifts for children overseas during the National Collection Week, November 18th to 25th. In Bloomington, drop-off sites include Cross Point Church of God, 3101 Airport Road, 4 to 8 p.m., November 18th, 19th, 21st, 22nd, 4 to 6:30 p.m., November 20th, 1 to 4 p.m., November 23rd, 24th, and 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. on November 25th. In Eureka, the drop-off is Cross Point Community Church, 951 County Road, 1625 East. Drop-off times, 10 to noon, November 18th, 19th, and 23rd, 1 to 3 p.m., November 20th, 2 to 4 p.m., November 21st and 22nd, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m., November 24th, and 9 to 11 a.m., November 25th. In Gibson City, the drop-off site is Gibson City Bible Church, 309 North Route 47, 9 to 11 a.m., November 18th to the 21st, 23rd, 25th, 2 to 4 p.m., November 22nd, 10 to noon, November 24th. In Lincoln, drop-off at Jefferson Street Christian Church, 1700 North Jefferson Street, 8 to 4 p.m., November 18th to the 24th, and 8 to 10 a.m. on November 25th. And in Streeter, Central Church of Christ, 2001 East Main Street, drop-off times 9:30 to 3:30, November 18th to the 22nd, 9:30 to 1:30, November 23rd, 8:30 to 2:30, November 24th, and 7 to 9 a.m. on November 25th. Operation Christmas Child is a project of Samaritan's Purse. They can be found at samaritanpurse.org/OCC. And last from our Monday memos, NCHS Y program teaches civics. The Bloomington Normal YMCA has launched a program at Normal Community High School to teach students about the importance of democracy, civics, and civility. YMCA Youth and Government is a learning experience for high school students statewide. The intent is to teach students leadership skills that will serve them in school and to give them tools to become involved in their community and to be responsible citizens. Student delegations have meetings to determine bill topics, work on parliamentary procedure, and invite community leaders to speak with students about community and civic engagement. The program includes two pre-legislative training sessions and an assembly conducted at the state capitol in Springfield. 9 students are participating at NCHS. Students pay tuition and YMCA provides financial assistance if needed. Next, we have an article from Kevin Barlow, Woman Dies in Two-Vehicle Crash. A 42-year-old woman was killed in a two-vehicle crash near Arrowsmith on Sunday afternoon, said McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder. At about 2 p.m., a semi-trailer truck and a passenger vehicle were involved in an accident near 3300 East 1300 North Road in McLean County, Yoder said. About 40 minutes later, the woman, who was the driver in the vehicle, was pronounced dead at the scene. A passenger was treated and released at an area hospital, but his name and condition have not been released. An autopsy on the woman is scheduled for Monday. Her name has not been released. The incident remains under investigation by the McLean County Coroner's Office and the McLean County Sheriff's Department. The Ellsworth Fire Department, Gibson Area EMS, Saybrook Aerosmith Fire Department, Colfax Fire Department, McLean County Sheriff's Department, and Illinois State Police assisted at the scene. From Springfield, the veto session to resume. State lawmakers return on Tuesday. The byline is Doug Finke from the State Journal Register. The curtain rises up on Act 2 of the veto session Tuesday, with lawmakers back to maybe tackle some of the issues that weren't really addressed the first week. The future of a ban on flavored tobacco and vaping products will be on the line, as will consolidation of downstate police and fire pension systems. The General Assembly also has a whole new issue to deal with if it chooses, beefing up ethics laws in the wake of the ever-widening federal investigation into activities surrounding state government. Representative Tim Butler, Republican from Springfield, said he was a little bit surprised how many bills we actually pushed out the first week, but he added that at the end of the day, I doubt we're going to do any real big stuff if we're there for only 3 days. Our next article is titled Hayworth Recognized for Energy Efficiency. The Village of Hayworth was one of 9 organizations named Ameren Illinois Energy Innovator Award winners in the second year of the program. The competition recognizes organizations for outstanding achievement in energy efficiency. Hayworth won the Energy Innovator New Technology Award. Using information from the existing flow meter, the village installed sewer plant aeration controls to reduce energy use. Use of aeration controls was a unique and more cost-effective solution compared to more traditional technologies such as variable frequency drives. The village received $5,000 and plans to use the funds to install occupancy sensors and update lighting and pumps. Other categories included energy savings projects and community benefit. This completes the first part of our reading from the Pantograph, dated Monday, November 11th. We'll take a short break now, and then we'll resume. I hope you'll stay with me.